I'm super excited to have a guest, a special guest, man. This guy is somebody that is killing it on LinkedIn and somebody that, you know, serendipity allowed us to collide. We were talking about the future of sales and he had a perspective, I had a perspective. And over time, I think his perspective is winning right now. I'm not going to give him too much props, but Eric Grohovac, man, is somebody from Pittsburgh. He's a former football coach, pharmaceutical rep, now 12-year vet medical device sales coach, where he's literally helping people get into the space. But I view this guy as like a leader of leaders, man. He gets people into this career path and I think helps develop them overall in their character. Really, I think, plays a big part into it. So we talk a lot about different strategies around what it takes to be successful in this world of medical device sales, as well as what it takes to have a proper outlook on your career. So I know you guys will love this. I mean, I sat on this episode for like at least a good 2 months because I was waiting for the right time to really launch it off. And as we're really diving in deep into our actual course to help people get into medical device sales through becoming an independent sales rep, it's a different approach than what a lot of people kind of view the career path in. But boy, I tell you, if you can master this place of running your own business, basically, as a medical device distributor or independent sales rep, if you want to go work for any of the big logos, man, you'll have more than enough experience to make that happen. If you want to just sit back and keep doing this, you'll be able to have that infrastructure in place. Or if you just want a really lucrative side hustle, and that's kind of what I've been doing with it over the past almost 8 years now. That go happening on over at Nearsight Health. Love for you guys to go check it out. You can go to joinnearsight.com for more information. I'll have the link in the show notes. With that being said, let's dive into this really cool conversation, inspiring conversation, and just somebody that's just practical. It's practical. Just, you know, he's a Pittsburgh dude, man. So we're blocking and tackling is what we're up to when it comes to winning medical device sales. All right. Hope you guys enjoy this convo with Eric Grohovac. Really glad to have a fellow Pittsburgher on the actual podcast with me. I don't get nearly enough people from our backwoods on the show, man. And I've been looking at your content on LinkedIn for some time now. You got some great information. Love your background too. The fact that you were like a football coach and now you're a medical device sales rep. Man, welcome onto the podcast.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. It's good to finally make it work.
100%. Dude, and classic fashion too, man. Like, I was late today and I know that we had our actual times crisscrossed last time. And then you like hooked me up and took care of me, bro. Like, this is goes to show.
Dude, I had to.
How you're like a supreme whenever it comes to like mastering relationships, man. Dude,
I was sick to my stomach, dude. When I missed that call, I was like, you got to be kidding. Because that's my number one pet peeve. So I'm like, here I am, late to this thing.
Eric, though, you know what's so great about this is that you're how you handle the disappointment of it, right? I think that's a great learning experience and all. We're all human. Things happen. Get busy. Life pops up with all types of wild stuff at any given moment. And it's how we can control that response. Like, I'm always thinking about like, all right, it happened. It's done. Like, I can't go back in time. I don't have any hot tub. What do you call them? Time machines out there. If I can go back and like replay this thing, it is what it is. And I thought that was a really cool way of how you make it right, basically. And talking about coaching a little bit. So you were a tight end coach. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. When I left, I played at Ohio University and the time leading up to my graduation, my position coach had been in coaching forever all over the country. So when I told him I wanted to get into coaching, the plan was basically like, hey, when the season's over for your senior year, we'll start making phone calls and we'll see what we can find. He called me on like Christmas Eve after my senior year and was like, hey, I'm leaving Ohio. I got an offensive line job at the University of Louisville. I'm going to work for this guy named Bobby Petrino. And I was like, I don't even know who that is. But he was like, do you want to come? And I was like, dude, I'll come park cars, shine shoes, like whatever we got to do, I'm in. So he took that literally. They stuck me in the video department. Dude, I'm on a scissor lift filming practice after starting 32 consecutive Division I games. Now I'm filming practice. I was like, just eating a humble pie up there. But
yeah.
One day Coach Petrino walked by me in the hall. He's like, hey man, if you want to learn how to coach and learn about what we're doing here, he's like, you got to get out of the video room. And I was like, I can do that. And he's like, yeah, come on in. Let's watch some film and just mix it up and get in there. So I was like, shoot, if that's the case, that's what I'm going to do. And then fast forward, I became the graduate assistant for the offense the following year. We had a coach get sick right after practice, and he took some time off, and he was splitting the tight ends and the running back. So they gave me the tight end position, which was awesome because it was a great group of guys that went on to be all pros and all that sort of thing, Super Bowl champions too.
Wow.
But that was just a great, to give a young kid like that responsibility with a great group was the fast track of leadership, really, is what was happening. Fast forward into my career in med device and sales and leadership and all that stuff. But that, I used to always say that those 3 years I spent at Louisville, dude, which was basically 52 weeks a year, 110 hours a week.
Wow.
Thousands of hours, literally, of being around that stuff. It was the greatest preparation I could have ever had for my future career, just to get that sort of exposure to boardroom decisions, personnel decisions, all that stuff.
No. All right. I already got a ton of questions because I think this is going to cross over for anybody that's trying to break into that medical device space, man. Is that like, were you campaigning? Were you going around trying to plant seeds and really get the word out? Or were you like more so reserved and then being patient and waiting?
Yeah. As things came down to a head, there was actually a position open on the staff. So there was a opportunity for me to be a full-on position coach. It did have the caveat of special teams coordinator, which I knew nothing about, dude. I was an offensive lineman. Like, I was just starting to figure out passing game and all these other parts of football, which was great as a tight ends coach because you get all that. There was an opening, and I can vividly remember knocking on the head coach's door, him waving me in. I'm sitting down. I'm like, coach, I really want this. I think it was an outside linebacker job that was coupled with special teams. And I was like, man, I want this job. Long story was, I didn't get it. And he definitely made the right decision because it was a special teams thing. And the guy they brought in was a world-class expert there, and everything took care of itself. But yeah, towards the end, it was like, okay, I want to start making some money is what it came down to too. I was making $600 a month, working 110 hours a week. So mathematically, it's well below the line that anyone should be at, but paying dues and, it was what I signed up for anyway, so it was all good. But I was getting to that point in my life where I was like, I'm tired of living and renting this closet that I'm sleeping in, and I'd love to maybe get a condo or something. And and as I told one of the coaches that became my mentor there, he offered to give me part of his paycheck, sleep at his house, just to not leave. So it was really difficult when I left. When I told everyone that was believing in me that I was going to have a future in the business, that I was out, that was freaking rough. That was tough, but it was to ultimately to get back to Pittsburgh, start a family with a Pittsburgh girl, like the whole thing. So
yeah,
it all worked out there, but that was a tough time thinking back on it. But if I try and play the what if game, like what if he would have said yes, where I would have gone along the way, I probably wouldn't have the family I have right now. I'd probably be living in freaking Albuquerque, New Mexico. Who knows where I would be? So it's just, it all works out for a reason. Yeah.
1000%, man. I think it's good to always look back and reflect on those moments because that's something that we all go through, right? We're making different choices and you just don't know the outcomes. Like, just as much as you would like to run the numbers, look at the data, try to figure out ask what's next. When you're going into brand new territories, you just don't have any data points. There's nothing for you to hang on to besides a hope and a prayer and to say, I'm going to go figure it out, man. So now that you're coaching people that are trying to break into this space, medical device space, man, you know, what's some maybe lessons out the gate that you would recommend that people do when they're like trying to step into brand new territories? Because I'd imagine that you're talking to people from all over, right? People don't have any experience at all to maybe some people that have a lot more years under their belt.
Yeah. If we're just focusing in on you got the job, you've been given a new territory, what do you do now?
Yep.
And this is something that would come up quite a bit over the years through the interview process, and some of the, but still held on to, is like, what's your 30, 60, 90 plan? What are you going to do in the first 3 months? And there was probably a time and a place for that sort of strategy, but anytime that would come up in an interview and someone would share with me that 30, 60, 90 that they probably put good effort into, and I would thank them for that and say, hey, I appreciate you putting the time in here, but I want to know what you're going to do on day one. I want to know like what your God-given instincts are for the first day if all you're going to be given is an account list. I'm going to give you the list of accounts. This is your turf. Here's the address. Here's the name of the hospital, whatever. I'm on Hawaii on vacation. You can't get a hold of me. You don't have a computer yet. Your business cards didn't come in. You don't have statistical data on who's buying what and how much and all those things. Marketing's on vacation. You can't get a hold of anybody, but all you have is that list. What are you going to do on your first day? And what you're looking for in somebody baseline is just not, I'll tell you what you're not looking for is the person that's going to sit there all day and try and plot out their course of how they're going to get to this hospital and that hospital and who they might know on LinkedIn. It's like all these, they just sit on their hands. So basically their first day is like, I'm going to just stay home and think about stuff. And what you want and the advice that I'm going to give you is don't do that. Look at that list and go meet somebody. Just let them know you're there. Shake their hand. Hey, I'm Joe. I'm with this XYZ company. I'm the new rep that handle these products. I don't even know what these products do just yet. I'm so new. Isn't this funny? Isn't this crazy? But if you need something from my company, here's my information. In fact, give me your card and I'll come back in 2 weeks when I know more and we'll talk more about it. You know, just get out there and mix it up because you'll trip and fall over. Someone will be like, actually, we need to buy 5 of those. And you're like, whoa, okay. Did I sell something? What just happened? So yeah, just the advice is just be active, get out of your office, be in front of your customers. I don't know if you're a Penn State fan. I'm not. My dad played at Pitt. So like we were just raised that couldn't be the way, but
I'm a straight Pitt guy too, bro.
Okay, good.
You speak the exact same language here. Yeah,
good. But Joe Paterno had this saying, like run to the ball and good things will happen.
He's right.
And the customers are the ball. And if you just run to your customers, you'll pick up a fumble, you'll scoop and score. You'll tackle somebody that's trying to scoop and score. It's just, if you get around your customers, you got a good chance of something good happening.
Man, I love that advice, first and foremost. Two, prior to me breaking into the industry, I applied to all the big logos, right? I just did this episode with our actual CEO. I've been with this company now for about 7 years. And zero experience. I was selling warehousing space prior. So I knew some sales stuff, but didn't know anything about med device. Basic sales skills, I would say, really elementary. And when I think about the times I went through those interviews and I made it to the second round and third round interviews with these other larger groups, and you name them, it was all of them. I was hitting them up like crazy. And they would ask me things like that. And I would take this approach of, yeah, let me come out with this master plan as if this rookie knows exactly how to go trend, cover this landscape that I have no information on. I didn't know anybody, no relationships, no insight. And you're talking to people that do. That's the crazy part. It's like, once I was a young buck, like 8 years ago, talking to these people, I'm trying to tell them like, this is what exactly needs to happen. And this needs to, and you sound so great. You sound like you got the world figured out.
Yeah.
It's like these 20-year-old life coaches. Don't get me wrong. They might know a ton of stuff. Talk to a 50-year-old a little bit. Who might have been through a couple more ringers.
Yeah.
And they probably have a couple more layers on the cake than what you brought to us.
Yeah.
So no, man, I think getting out there and just getting active and getting in front of people just puts you in actual rooms and situations where you can have something to happen. It may be negative, but you can learn from that too. Even if like you opened up with a horrible line, they told you no, whatever the case may be. Take all those lessons. Nah, man, I love that as a day one movement. So, you know, moving forward too, a little bit in the industry. Sorry, I'm just kind of diving right into the tactics, man. But
No, it's all good. I love it.
You already got so much stuff on LinkedIn. You gave me too much ammo. I'm just like, we just get tactical with them. I feel like a lot of podcasts talk about the good, all the backstories and all that, which is great. But sometimes people just need, what's the next? And I'm going to fast forward a little bit here. It's Q4. And let's say you're a rep and you're like, man, I'm behind on quota, right? It's gotten weird. I got mentally out of the game. Do you have any tips, any thoughts, any strategies that you think like tactically that maybe they could do to help them get back into flow?
Yeah. I was just on a round table deal for Q4 the other day with a guy named Mike O'Kelly, who hosts a podcast called Surviving Outside Sales. And we dug into this. Here's the thing about Q4. If you find yourself in the middle of Q4, which we are, if you work under the calendar, January to December. This is Q4 and you're in the middle of it. The catch with Q4 is it's more of a Q2, Q1 sort of effort that gives you the fourth quarter that you're going to have. If you're in Q4 and you're trying to get home, and you're, when I say home, hit quota, that's an old nomenclature from my old days. So if I say that, that's what that means. But if you find yourself in the middle of Q4 and you're scrambling for a way to get home, I get it. Now, I've been there, but certainly you've got to think to yourself, going into next year when Q1 and Q2 and in the meat of the year is in play, what type of Q4 do you want to have? So the saying I would always have with my reps and even my managers was, hit your number by Halloween. You're playing this whole thing to get home by Halloween. You can enjoy the holidays, so the stress isn't there and all of that. But if you've got to hit a home run, or sometimes they call it a Hail Mary. I just don't like that because it sounds like you're just lobbing something up and you're hoping somebody catches it. I'd like to see cover two and throw a post, but you've got to work with the folks that are inside your organization first. So you're talking about your manager, you're talking about the folks that are in finance that can truly say yes or no. If you're going to put together a deal that a customer can't refuse, you're going to want to make sure you get enough blessing on what your range is and what you can really do to be profitable for the company ahead of time. So you're going to have the internal powwow of all the people that can say yes to a deal that you're going to put together. That's certainly because if you don't have that and you're just throwing things out there, like I've seen bad fourth quarter deals get put together where they weren't thought all the way through. And then somehow they come back and bite you when you get into the next fiscal year. Like the customer tries to send it back, or the pricing's out of whack, or someone's not going to get the commissions they thought because it just wasn't well thought out. So the key is just going to be don't panic, but in the same breath, understand that Q4 is really one half of your standard selling quarter. You've got Christmas, you've got Thanksgiving, you've got retirements, you've got flu season, COVID season. People just aren't in and around the office as much in Q4. You can't get a hold of people as well in Q4. So you have to plan for that as well too. But certainly it's to have a good Q4 is to have a good Q2. Really is what it comes down to with activity.
That's the best way to look at it too. It's really interesting to think about how much influence what you do 6 months ago, the mindset that you open up the actual year with. And what's interesting about Q4 for me is that the times when I was behind on Q4 and we're like battling to try to get to some type of decent standing, right? Like then I'm burned out on Q1 normally. And then I'm coming out for the first 2 to 3 weeks trying to catch up because I was taking calls on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve. And I'm talking to folks trying to get something done right before the end of the year. And then January 1, January 2, when everybody's coming out like with their plans and they're hot, I'm coming out like, all right, it's time to go back to the trader room. And it really starts a bad cycle, man. There's a lot of conversation going on around burnout between different sales reps right now. Are you seeing people that you're coaching deal with this in different strategies? Do you have any strategies for them to manage like the burnout that just comes with and all the stress that like come with sales?
Yeah, I think, yes, the answer is yes. There's people that are trying to work around that or work through that. The good news for everybody is everyone goes through it in some form or fashion. And if you haven't gone through it yet, you're going to. Mm-hmm. It's almost inevitable. The big piece is, and I learned this from a mentor of mine who was an exceptional leader of people, really just fantastic, the type of leader that you dream about working for. And they had a pretty heavy bout of burnout, and it led to all sorts of things, man, depression and anxiety and just all sorts of rough stuff. And when I think about their situation, even talking to them as they were going through it, the biggest thing that came out of it was like what you do for a living as an employee. So whether if you're a sales rep for a company, you're a sales leader for a company, like whatever that is, and great culture, bad culture, what's going on in that organization, that's not your identity. You are not that. You're way more than that. That is what you do for a living. and you enjoy doing it and you have friends there and there's all sorts of good, but if you start wrapping up your identity in your quota attainment achievements and like the promotions that you've gotten and who you really are professionally too much, that's when the balance can really just be too much for most anybody. When they just get so caught up in their identity being what they do for a living, that it can just, the weight can stack up and it can just crush them down. So I hope that makes sense, like what I'm saying. I used to tell, I think the first time I passed that advice on to my team, it was a group of sales leaders, and they looked at me like, wait, what? Because I was with a company that was like very, I came from Stryker, dude, and Stryker is very, the culture at Stryker is amazing. And it's a great group of people and everybody loves each other. And you have your social security number, which is basically your quota attainment and your Gallup top five strengths, you know, because they really help us understand where we're good, where we're not.
Yeah.
And I think when I said that for the first time to my team, they kind of looked at me like, gosh, can you say that? And it's like, yes, I can say that. You guys are not, your identity is not being 5 for 5 in quota. Your identity is that you're a mom, you're a dad, you're a coach to your kids, like you're a brother, you're a sister, you're a son, you're a daughter, like all the things that really matter. If all this went away tomorrow, like if Amazon came in here and bought this company and dismissed all of us, then what are you? Are you still 5 for 5? Or are you a mom, a dad, a brother? You know what I mean? It's, don't get so wound up in that. Certainly perform, certainly be a good teammate, do all the things right, but don't wear it so heavy on yourself that it's going to crush you one day.
Dude, that's it, man. Because it's what you hear athletes struggle with, right? Like they're struggling to let go of the game or they're getting older. Yeah. And sometimes other motivations behind it, but still, when you get so wrapped up into a temporary thing in your life, because at some point we're going to retire. We're all going to stop working, God willing. You won't just hopefully, you just work your way right into the grave and then you're out. Yeah. So hopefully we're all going to transition out of whatever you're currently doing or whatever you love in the moment. And then what's next? And you hear people go through these downward spirals or just walking around in the fog, which is fine. I think that's part of life too, right? Like being like not having all the answers is actually a pretty cool place to be whenever you just accept it. Yeah. Life becomes fun again. And you can actually start to experiment and then relearn things. So all those are good things. But when we get so wrapped up in these titles and these identities and these commission checks coming through, and it could be addictive, man. You get a nice spiff, you get a nice commission. It becomes like, oh, I can do this every week. I can do this every month or every quarter. However it plays out for you. And it's easy to fall into, this is who I am. And this is the main thing for me. And there's so many other aspects of life.
Yeah.
It's been great to watch LinkedIn content evolve a lot. I see a lot more family stuff, a lot more. I even see people talk about more, and I've been pushing it a little bit too, not pushing hard because I'm not going to try to convert anybody here, but even talking about your faith, man. Like if you believe in something and it's cool for you, don't push it on anybody's throat. But if it's a part of who you are, then man, get it out there. Why not? If it's in your mix and it makes sense to how, to really how it rounds you out as a person. When we think about sales, and medical device sales, one of the things that kind of got our conversation going, especially, was the future of it and how I was like, man, I see a lot of things happening. Yeah. And I'm not one to say anything's dead anymore. I made that mistake like 5 years ago. I wrote a blog post that said, cold calling's dead. Dumbest thing in the world. Still the dumbest thing. Yeah. But when we think about things evolving, how do you see it taking shape in the future? If we have a 5 to 10 year outlook on this thing, especially in our industry, medical device.
Yeah, COVID was an interesting time because that was when everything shut down. What was like March, April, like that March, April timeframe of 2020. I can remember, gosh, I felt like I worked hard in my time in sales and in leadership, but I felt like we worked the hardest in that 2 month timeframe to just prepare for everything that could be happening because there was so much unknown, right? Nobody knew what was going to happen. Nobody knew what was happening. So we started planning for what could be. And then as it got to the point where like reps weren't allowed in and all that stuff was going on and procedures weren't happening, there was a couple instances along the way. I thought to myself out of one side of my brain, dang, dude, they might shut the whole thing down after this is done. Like, they might realize that everybody's worthless and you can't, I don't know. Like I just, my brain got the best of me. And then there was like these couple instances where we had reps that were out there not trying to get into the hospital, but just almost like standing outside the building being like, do you guys need anything? Because everything was so crazy.
Wow.
March and April when COVID was cranking and it was bad, dude. You can think what you want about the pandemic, but freaking COVID whooped some people's butts, unfortunately, and it was rough for a while, right? So we had reps that were just standing outside the building being like, dude, if you guys need like, you need, what do you need? Anything you need, I'm here for you. And there was a couple executives who were like, you know what? I appreciate you guys being here because like every other, we haven't seen anybody. So a lot of reps took the like, okay, we're going to stay out. And they stayed out and they stayed home and they got a Peloton and they did what everybody else was doing. And that just gave me the little glimmer of hope. Okay, no, this is such a people business. That's not going to happen. It can't happen. So when we go back, Joe, to think about the topic that you and I were getting into just typing is like the Tesla model. Can someday med device head to that, towards that? And I guess the answer is anything's possible, but the catch is, what's the challenge with Tesla? It's like, you can go into the little store. My brother just bought one a couple months ago. And I was like, well, how's that going? He's like, dude, my phone is all I needed to do the whole transaction.
Yeah.
He's like, he's a car guy, like big time car guy. So it was just very weird for him.
Yeah.
But then down the road, when you have service issues or it gets a little hairy post sale, put it that way. And that's where you need that sales rep. Like my wife and I bought a car for her. She deserved one. It's been a while. And this summer, and then the freaking air conditioner didn't work. And good thing I had a dealership to go to and a person to talk to be like, hey, this thing's under warranty, fix it. Whereas Tesla, they've got these remote, people have to drive out to your house and fix the car. And just a lot of post-sale challenges. And when I think about like, how does that relate to med device? I can think of legitimate conversations with who I would consider heavy hitters in the hospital supply chain world. Some of these people that are fantastically trained in sourcing the most clinically acceptable at the right price stuff, big IDNs. And they made a comment one time where we were getting into commission talk and all that sorts of stuff. They were trying to attack the rep a little bit. And then when they realized the fact, it's like, you need these reps because what's going to happen when we pull up to the loading dock with an 18 wheeler and unload all this stuff into the building? Do you have a team of people that now you're going to hire to implement this, to train people? It's basically impossible. Okay. And if they want to try and do it, they could, but they get so far out of their wheelhouse there. I don't think anybody in the hospital world wants to do that.
Yeah.
But they do some shipping and receiving stuff, which makes sense for them. But when it comes to the post-sale implementation, being there for the customer, when you've got a sick person involved, they need the rep. That's when they need the rep the most. That's like literally when all the work starts for any good rep that's listening to this. They know when it's after the commission check came, after the equipment's delivered, that's when the work begins anyway. That's when you earn your money. So that's my thought on, can the Tesla model creep its way into med device? And I guess anything's possible, but man, it might be short-lived because of that post-sale service.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to debate that, man, because from my standpoint, even what I do is capital equipment, and it can be very transactional at times. They make a big purchase and yeah, they might buy another one in 2-3 years. But what I've noticed, and this is not like repeat business, it seems like how you guys are operating, but even what I noticed from a capital side, which is, you know, it might take them 6 months to purchase, right? Mm-hmm. Big expense for them. You have to get under budget, maybe even a year and a half out, depending on what's going on.
Yep.
And if I stay connected to them, just little things like automations, through sending out some podcast episodes that might make sense for them, giving them protocols on just how they can maximize the actual device. And this is not a short-term play. This is not like I get in here, 90 days, yep, I'm going to see return. This is a 24-month, this is a 26-mile marathon type of setup. But the referrals I get in year, like 2.5 years out, 3 years out, the actual deals close within a fraction of the time.
Yep.
So where it took me 6 months, the people are like, hey, this Joe's taking care of me with this device that I went to bat for, because you got to think about their position too. They went the bat to go say, I'm going to work with this guy and buy this device over the other people out there, because there's always competition. And so if you let them down, then they're like, Joe failed me. And now my job has tension, whatever that means.
Yep.
And so if the rep stays connected to them, man, that's a strong value add. And I don't, you might think about the future of sales even. It's like the outbound stuff can be so automated. There's so many things that can get you the branding, the digital place. There's a lot of good tools out there where you see stuff that's like, man, it's a button, man. You're personalizing things. And they have things that you can put someone's voice over it so it even sounds like them. And a lot of that's kind of heavy. So we got to watch that. But with that, I'm just saying the outbound stuff, I could see how that could take some place. But the post, it's just difficult to debate, man. Do you think that reps are really getting that aspect? Do you think that's like a well-known thing to the people that you're coaching as a whole?
Yeah. I think veteran reps certainly understand that. I do. Because they... If you're in the business long enough, you know how important that is. The sale isn't over until I sold hospital stretchers. So capital. I grew up in the capital world of med device. I managed the bed and stretcher business for a little bit. Even defibrillators, capital stuff that they buy every 6, 7, 8, 9 years or whatever it might be.
Yep.
You always say like, the sale's never over until the patient's like head hits the pillow on that bed that you sold. But you get the ultimate. You also get the ultimate reason to be back in the building because your stuff is in there. One of the things we used to tee up on the front end of a capital sale is just every quarter, we're going to come back and re-in-service everybody because the turnover is so high. And the end user calling on nurses, if those nurses don't know how to use this equipment, they're going to badmouth it. So you have to come back every quarter and re-educate and make sure everybody's comfortable on what button does what and how does this work and how do you steer this thing and why is it so heavy and it shouldn't be heavy. Let's take a look at how you're using it. So you can get in there and spend more time, and it's the ultimate advantage because any good rep's always trying to figure out how can I get back in the building to talk to somebody? And if your equipment's already installed, you've got a good... A legit good excuse to be in the building to help people just re-educate and resell it over and over again because your competitor is not just chilling. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they're coming in there to poke holes in why it's so heavy. Hey, that thing's so heavy. Does it feel really heavy? And they're going down this thing's too heavy or whatever it might be. Meanwhile, you're the rep that sold it to them. And if you just keep educating them on the fact that it actually isn't, if they use it the right way,
yeah,
it's just a really broad example. But yeah, dude, that's the other piece of it is your competition's trying to get in there and uproot you.
Man, one of the things I love about being from Pittsburgh too, and you'll probably get this, man, is that, man, we keep life safe. It's like, and I love it at times because I had a chance to live in some big cities. I'm in Atlanta now. I was in LA during COVID. And I got to tell you, when I got wrapped up into what was happening on the West Coast, it was different, man. I remember... Yeah. When it hit and I was in the Bay Area calling on clients and downtown, I was able to get a room for less than $200. I'm like, wow, that's great, man. Get a room for less than $200. Ghost town. It was like a scary movie, zombie apocalyptic type of zone. That's whenever they had that big cruise ship that was outside of Oakland. So I was right across the bridge and everybody's nervous. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm gonna go home. I'm gonna go home and chill with the wife.
Yeah.
And I stayed home for maybe 3-4 weeks. I forgot, but it was right around a month and I started to crack. I'm like, I can't just sit here. I'd be like, and I'm doing Zooms every day, 4 or 5 Zooms. I'm having wine and beer with people all the time. We're trying to do anything to get some engagement, we're trying to get some attraction. And it's just hard to beat the simplicity that we roll with out of Pittsburgh, which is, hey, man, you get in front of people, you get close to the ball, good things start happening. You start figuring stuff out and it doesn't have to be overcomplicated. And I think all the veteran reps, like when I look at the people that I admire, not doing things that are so complex, you're like, wow, I never thought about that. It's like this big math equation. They got this thing happening. It's simple activities, man. I love that actual feedback, man. When we think about like how people are staying close, going back in, is the hospitals now, have things opened back up? Is the world like back to 18? Is it still this? Because like, I don't sell to a lot of hospitals. I mean, I have a couple big accounts, but I've had them now for a while, so it's a lot easier. But for lots of people that you're coaching, is it easier getting into these hospitals? Are they walking halls? Could you talk about those details a little bit?
Yeah, from what I understand at this point, I think, gosh, I don't want to put this out into the ethos, but I think the days of ducking in the loading dock entrance and working your way through the hospital without vendor credentialing or anything like that, I think they probably tightened back down to the way that vendors need to come in and credential.
Sure.
So I think some of the formal things they had in place to keep tabs on reps prior to COVID seems as if they're going back to really relying on that stuff and getting a little more tight on having a reason to be in the building. Do you have a meeting? Filling out all that stuff at the little kiosk. I think it's probably swung back more to really proceed with caution if you're just going to go into the building and not try and get a badge. So that's probably the biggest thing. But, you know, outside of that, I know that they've removed masks and mandatory masks in a lot of hospitals, at least where my wife's working. And I thought that was a big deal now that they've gotten to the point where they're just starting to take masks off and get back to as close to what normal would be, what we remember with that. So I think, I think it's getting there all in. But the systems to keep tabs on reps, I feel like that's unfortunately more amped up than it was before.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I've been hearing. I haven't done a lot of that. I've worked with a lot of private practices, which is still easy. We can just pop in. And yeah, it's a little weird for some people because they're still masked up. They don't want to, what are you doing here? You don't have an appointment. So that happens a lot, but there's a lot less gatekeepers. I'll say that. Man, as we wrap up here, I want to hear about where you're taking your business. I want to hear how you're growing this whole coaching business, man. I think it's phenomenal. The fact that you're like used to working with athletes, and I think salespeople have very similar qualities. A lot of us were like former athletes. So I'm curious kind of how you're going to evolve it and maybe where you're going to take the actual business, man.
Yeah, dude, that's such a good question, because when I embarked on leaving Stryker, it was really, the conversation was somewhere along the lines of sitting down with my boss last year, and he's like, all right, man, what do you want to do next? And I was like, but I hope nobody walking by at this restaurant hears me say this too loud, because they're going to think I'm some jerk, but I only want to do what I'm good at and what I love. And it's like all the other stuff right now, it's just not interesting me as much. Like I know that I love to coach people. I know that I'm good at it. I know I can motivate people. I know I can build a culture. You've all said it. I know it. I just want to go do that. And so we talked about staying on in the organization to do those sorts of things. Institutionalizing a employee role like that was just going to take some time. And I was like, what if I'm just an independent contractor? And it was like, that's pretty easy. We could do that. So that became the plan. I put in like the 6-month notice and timed myself out there, which was an incredible experience in itself. Just kind of not retiring, but retiring from a company at 42 versus 65. That was neat, dude. Just the love that poured in was I'll admit, like I cried for like a good weekend just with the love that came in. It was interesting. So I was setting out to just get into coaching leaders, and you know, started reaching out to people I know in the National Football League and college. And there's a need for leadership development all over the place. Yes. There's a need for the understanding of what that really means, especially in sports. Been working on doing some things there, but then when I just opened up LinkedIn one day and really started to learn about content creation and what are you an expertise in? What can you talk to 5,000 people and not prepare for 30 minutes? What is that? For me right now, it's med device and leadership and those sorts of things. Just started doing that, and organically opportunities have come in. So what's my plan for the business? I've got one-on-one coaching that I do behind the scenes. I'd like to build out a very affordable, very powerful online course that people can get that's really going to give them all they need, because there's so much misconception about med device, a career in med device, all that stuff, that I'd like to just share everything that I know. And that's what's next. I'd like to get that buttoned up here in the next 2 months so I can get that out to people where they can get it all from me versus paying hourly to go through that stuff.
Oh, I wish I had one of those like bomb drops right now on the actual
The Bradley bomb.
Yeah, the Bradley real bomb, dropping bombs like that. Man, but I'll just get behind this, and I want to double down on what you're saying, because the leadership component, you look at this phase that people went through whenever the government was writing a lot of checks, right? Cutting a lot of dollars. People were like, hey, I'm leaving my job. Great resignation happened. People started leaving out and wanted to do their own thing. And I love it, man. I love people going independent, doing their thing. I think it allows us to be more creative when there's a lot of automation happening and doing exactly what you're doing. And I think the thing that companies got to realize, if they want to attract top talent, they want to get the people in to have the chops, that are willing to work, willing to learn, have skills, maybe don't have the skills yet, but willing to develop them, the culture. Yep. Without the culture, without the leadership, and the leadership sets the culture. So without the leadership to set the right culture environment that allows it to filter through the whole system, people are always going to leave. It's going to be like, you can pay them whatever you want to pay them to come in. They're going to be walk on the back door as soon as they can figure out how to maintain it on their own. Yep. And there's so many ways to make money. There's a ton, man. I'm doing these things. We're building out these like small group educational events, micro events. I'm just having doctors do like peer-to-peer learning. It's been really cool to watch. And it's like, man, that's a nice little thing happening. And there's now online groups that I've been doing and playing with paid private groups. And it's, there's a lot of different little revenue buckets that you can go create if you want. Yep. And how do you keep these people in the system, keep them in your company? Because you made an investment. How do you get them to stay?
Yeah.
It's tough without that leadership, man. So I think that lane alone, medical device companies should be geeking over. Are you connected with Matthew Ray Scott on LinkedIn?
Yes. Yeah. I'm connected with Matthew. I don't know him personally, but just through the way LinkedIn kind of pairs people up, I've been tuning into what he's putting out.
Super solid guy. Love his approach and content to like the marketing side of it.
Yep.
And he's like a former like medical device sales guy as well. So he's went over to the marketing world, but it's, man, there's a lot of independence happening. And he made a post about how some of the top earners now are just going it to 99. Like, I can do this on my own. I can do my own thing, come up with my own marketing strategy and kind of lock in. And they're making more money from what he's seeing based off his actual group. Yep. But man, you guys should definitely jam at one point. I'll definitely put you guys on a post so you guys can talk, because you guys will hit it off, I believe. But long story short is that those guys in like his group, if they had some leadership maybe above them, or they became the leaders to go in, some of these big logos could hold on to some of that top talent, I believe. So I think what you're doing is needed. I think it's going to be a big void. I think it's not going anywhere. I think companies are going to be looking for guys to get people trained up, because if you don't, they're going to say, all right, I can go do some of my own. I'll be a rep. I'll make my own buck that way. And that can get interesting for the big logos and maybe post some different things that might not be in their favor in the future. So, Eric, dude, that was great, man. That was great.
Yeah, Joe, I enjoyed it, man. That was fun.
Dude, please tell everybody how to find you. Websites too, man. Plug away here.
Yeah, it's, again, Pittsburgh guy. I'm going to keep it simple. You can find me on LinkedIn, Eric with a K, Grahovac, Grahovac. That is my website. That is my kind of, I hope LinkedIn doesn't shut down, because I'm toast if LinkedIn goes away. But yeah, you can reach out to me there and shoot me a note. Make sure you follow my content. I post every weekday morning at 8:15 a.m. Eastern time. I'm just trying to give away $1 million advice every day. Truly, like, advice that I think over the years, as I was interviewing people that were trying to break into the business and all that, if I could just pause time right now and help them, because they're not going to get this job, and there's 5 reasons why. And if I could just break it down and help them right now as to what they're doing wrong, that's what I'm trying to do on LinkedIn, is just give the advice that people weren't getting in the past, or maybe they were getting bad at, to try and avoid that and give them the best chance they can to, because, you know, med device sales can change your life for sure. It's that type of profession. It changed my life. I'm nobody special. It changed my life, but that's what I'm trying to do on LinkedIn. So you can follow me there, shoot me a note, and we can try and connect one off.
Eric, man, this has been a real joy talking to you, bro. Makes me feel like I'm back home already, man. Even though I'm down south, I feel like I'm just back just doing the basics, because we all walk around with this blue collar mindset, and it's a beautiful thing in sales, man. And you're the most consistent when it comes to this medical device. It's 8:15 sharp. I don't really think you really missed too many dials.
Never. I mean, never.
So again, thank you so much just for coming on to the show. I'll have all your actual plugs in the actual notes, man. And dude, we got to circle back and have some more contact in the future, because if this Tesla thing does come off, I'm putting this back in your face and told you, I told you, man.
Yeah, we'll meet up for a steak dinner and celebrate that one, Joe. That sounds good.
There we go. Yeah. Eric, again, brother, appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Good to see you.
Likewise.